Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAY2WIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Hey, you there. Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
I'm Dylan.
I'm Tyler.
This week, we are talking about our recent tournament. We had a tournament at Cloud City, the Play to Win CEDH tournament at Cloud City. It went great. There was a ton of people. We all had a lot of fun. We're going to talk about our experiences at that tournament.
That's right. We're doing another one of these. So here we go. Let's just get right into round one. We all played round one. Should we talk about the decks that we played this week?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Talk about the decks. Tyler, you go first. No one knows what you're playing, so
yeah,
it'll be a surprise.
I know this is going to come as a shock, but I am playing Kinnan, which is in a good spot, and also basically the only deck I've played for the last 3 years, now that Jessica Timna is banned. Not actually banned, but you know what I mean. It doesn't work anymore.
Well, are there any new cards in Kinnan that you played for this tournament specifically?
Enduring Vitality is so good. This came out in Duskmourne. It is the 3-mana. I think the cycle's called Glimmers. Enduring Vitality is 1/2 green, and it gives all your creatures the Birds of Paradise text. Plus, if it dies, it just comes back as an enchantment, which is really good.
I feel like that's like one of the best parts about it, because the Cryptothrite sees basically no play, but this card feels like way better, and it costs a mana more.
Coming back itself doesn't matter very much. It's just that people feel like there's no point in destroying it. Like, sure, it can still get exiled or stolen, but there's a whole class of interaction effects that just don't matter.
It's kind of almost like a weird hexproof against certain things, because you're right, they're not going to waste a removal spell on it, right?
Yeah, just funny when like Swords to Plowshares is like certainly something that they still could do that gets around that, but like there's so many decks that don't have access to that one Swords to Plowshares that they run, so I totally get that. Oh, it makes it like not Besageable either, too. I feel like that's a card that would classically deal with something like
Besage
that.
Besage, Force of Vigor, they don't feel good.
And you can tutor it off of a Green Sun Zenith and those other kind of cards.
Or find it off Kinnan. That's also obviously
also true.
Relevant.
Yeah. These are all awesome things. So that card has been awesome. A lot of my games that have gone well have had that in the game at some point.
Have you gotten anything going with the Otter and that out at the same time and like looping something with those?
Not in this tournament, but I've definitely had a bunch of games like that, and it occasionally comes up because this happens with the Otter and Birds of Paradise naturally. But if you have Enduring Vitality out and the Otter, meaning Valley Floodcaller.
Yes, Valley Floodcaller is a particular Otter.
Untap creatures you control when you cast a non-creature spell. If you have any of the other incidental birds or frogs out, such as Poliwag Prodigy, such as, I'm currently on Gilded Goose, which may come out, but Gilded Goose, once it eats the food, because I have Enduring Vitality and Cryptolithrite, it is more likely to still be able to tap for mana, and that one also works with Floodcaller, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, very cool. It can also, Floodcaller can also do it with itself too, right? It doesn't say other creatures.
Yeah,
it can
itself.
Also, so if it's summoning sick, if it's not summoning sick, you can still do that too.
Exactly. Yeah, nice. Sweet.
What else? Any other new special cards? Any new interests includes for this tournament?
That's really the big one. I've just, a lot of things have leaned into that game plan of Enduring Vitality.
I've seen a lot of people leaning into stuff that makes Valley Floodcaller good, and I feel like this is a small example of that, of just like Valley Floodcaller seems so powerful when everyone's playing Rhystic Studies and drawings, like so many cards. How do you win on the stack with Valley Floodcaller and Enduring Vitality? Enduring Vitality makes that also super easy.
I also did go back on Cyclonic Rift, which I had cut for a while. I cast it once and it got countered, and it didn't really feel important or good the whole weekend.
Okay.
I was just scared of Winota, and Rift
That's
is
fair.
Good against Winota.
Yeah, the catch-alls are nice to have in a tournament, I think. Just have like one catch-all just in case.
I agree. I always like having Cyclonic Rift just like as something in my back pocket to always have. Not literally, but just like in my 99. You know what I mean.
Why is this card all bent and shit?
Like, oh, wait a minute. I have something for this.
Hold on. Yeah, I got this.
It's been here the whole time.
Yeah, wow. My win rate skyrocketed all of a sudden.
It reminds me, this is like a complete side story. My sister, when we played Monopoly when we were younger, she would always take some of her money and put it under her lap throughout the game. So when you saw her, the young kid with like so few money, you would like feel bad for her. And then at the end, she would like take out her stash that she's been like hiding under her like the
whole
time.
That's so funny.
And like, there's nowhere in the rules that says you can't do that, I guess.
Yeah, right? You can
just
hide.
Playing on our emotions.
That's awesome.
That's actually really real, because a lot of companies will hide their money in offshore corporations and hedge funds.
Exactly.
So.
She was ahead of her time.
She really was. Holy shit.
Oh, no.
What about you, Kim?
I'm
what
playing
were you playing?
Rograkh Thrasios, and this is that's the deck that I'm playing, Rograkh Thrasios.
No spoilers on how it went or how we feel about our decks right now or anything. I'm playing Rogrex Silas, going fast, trying my best. Nothing new that I added to mine. Dark Petition and Reign of Filth are like the cards that I play that I don't see as much other people playing. I'm also not playing Orcish Bowmaster. All of that stuff actually felt okay to not relevant this tournament. But yeah, we'll get into more about the specifics as we go through the rounds.
Cool. So let's start off with round one then. Tyler, you told us about your commander first, so you should tell us about your round one first.
Sure. All right. So round one, I was playing against Mark. He's one of our local players who was playing the Master Reborn? The Salt Typhoon Chain deck.
No, the Master Transcendent.
Transcendent. Yeah,
there's too many masters
now.
Too many masters. We had Aaron on Timnathras, and then also Lance was playing Urza. Lance was one of the ones who topped forward like several tournaments ago on Cody.
Yeah, I know who you mean now, because I think that was the list that I based my Cody list off of, I think.
For this one, I kept a turn two one ring hand, and I was kind of arch enemy from the start because I had a pretty quick start and I was in seat one. My opponents got out Ristic and a Mystic Remora came down, and then a Bowmasters came out, so the game was shaping up to feel like it was about the one ring and the draw engines versus the Bowmasters, which really makes my field look pretty stupid.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at that point I've got some Mana Dorks and Kin and Dizzy easily and all that jazz. I ended up losing a lot of my board to that Bowmasters, but I eventually cloned the Ristic with a Clever Impersonator.
That's really cool. That feels up right.
Clone a Ristic study. That's really good. Sorry. Yeah, I'm just thinking about what that really means because that seems really good. Okay. Cloning a Ristic study seems super relevant, especially at this tournament. I feel like there was Ristic studies every single game.
There were so many. Absolutely. Yeah,
sorry. Keep going.
No, you're good. I cloned that Ristic study and then I kind of attacked my opponent's draw engines. I don't remember what combination of bouncing, destroying, whatever. I got rid of the other ones because I wasn't going to be able to handle the Bowmasters in the long run. We did get rid of the Bowmasters somehow, but then I kind of had spent almost everything on that, and I had to pass the turn, and then Mark on Master Transcendent decided, now it's time to jam, it's time to go for it. He cast Food Chain, he cast Eternal Scourge, and we're all going, oh no. But I had a Pact of Negation in my hand, and I was like, I could counter this Eternal Scourge. And I thought, but I have a Ristic Study, and he's going to have to cast Eternal Scourge 70,000 times. Like, I eventually will have free interaction for this because my deck runs Force of Vigor. I think I had like one or two mana up too. I don't think I was completely tapped out. So I, you know, said go for it, and he starts going and is putting all the rad counters on me. I was already low on life total by this time because of Bowmasters, but basically, you know, they were ensuring that I was going to die at least to the rad counters once I go to draw.
Which happens after your draw or before your draw?
After your draw, in your first main phase.
Okay.
Oh, the beginning of first main.
Got it. So he's drawing you 1,000 cards. You have a whole brick of cards. What happens?
So I end up drawing most of my deck and then Force of Vigoring the Food Chain. You know, my opponents aren't going to stop that either. They need that to not resolve.
Yeah, or else they just lose too. Yeah.
Oh, that's in an interesting spot, right?
So Mark was the only one who would have. Yeah. And that happens. I have half my deck in my hand. We pass around. I spend a little bit of interaction to stop them trying to blow me out. They're kind of talking about, you know, is he going to die in his upkeep? Because I also cast that Pact of Negation and I would have had 5 to pay. But in my upkeep, I was fortunate that in all that drawing, I didn't draw Emergence Zone, which meant that I could Crop Rotation in my upkeep for Emergence Zone with the Pact of Negation trigger and my One Ring trigger, which would have also been lethal to lose to the Burgess encounters. They were both on the stack, so I crack Emergence Zone on top of the Crop Rotation, Emergence Zone on top of those, and I was able to put an instant speed win together with Death on the stack.
That's so fun. Nice. What a great way to start the day.
Yeah. What do you instant speed win with now? Are you like Cephalid Colosseum looping?
I generally explain the Cephalid Colosseum loop, because I'm on Fairy Mastermind. It is sometimes easier to explain that if I have Fairy Mastermind and Endurance, I can just draw all of you out and just Endurance myself indefinitely. There's a lot of ways, but they all come down to you can draw your opponents out, make them draw their whole deck at instant speed, and if they try and respond, you can just start doing it again over top of that.
Yeah, that one always feels kind of strange because like drawing your opponents, like their gut reaction is going to be like, well, like I might draw something at some point, like I want to be able to interact, but it's hard to like explain that like, no, anything that you do, I can basically start it over. Like, you can start it over from any point,
like,
basically.
Not only did I draw all of my interaction already to deal with all of your interaction, but I can loop through my entire deck on top of you so that I'm continuously drawing an infinite amount of interaction.
Yeah.
And you won't. You will just lose.
Yeah, exactly. You just be able to draw through anything. Now, like, is there a world where, like, if they respond to the first Endurance and you keep drawing again, like, is there a world that, like, they could, if everyone also has all of their cards in hand, that they could do anything? Because like eventually you run out of cards, and if Endurance is on the stack, is there a way that you can like bounce Endurance from the stack and recast? What would you do there? Does it matter?
You can pull your own Endurance off the stack because the Cephalid Colosseum isn't the only line.
Yeah.
You can kind of say, all right, I'll just pivot into the Fairy Mastermind line
just
or whatever.
Just do another line instead. You have two instant speed options.
Yeah, I guess there's a world in which if somehow your opponents are able to get every single instant in your deck, onto the stack and then try and make you, you know, need to respond further. Like,
that's
it's pretty
world.
Hard to
that's
imagine
not
this
a
situation.
World.
Yeah. Yeah, you could think of a situation, but it's really, it's not going to come to
no
that.
One could ever do that in yeah. reality. Okay. Yeah.
And the other thing here is that, like, usually you clone Hullbreaker and you can say, I'm going to start by bouncing every single permanent you have and everything you're doing. And,
okay,
like,
yeah.
You know
that's
what I mean?
Too.
So,
yeah.
But anyway, it, you know, it's all shortcutting. We could play this out anytime. Fortunately, people don't usually
they don't want to. They don't
want to,
yeah.
None of us want to sit there for that long, but
yeah.
Nice. That's awesome. Well, I'm glad you got your first game. That's
yeah.
pretty sick.
That's a good
yeah.
way to win, too. Instant speed in response to losing the game two different ways.
It,
that's fun.
It felt sweet.
Cool.
What about you, Cam?
So I was up against Kenrith player, Asika, myself, and then Jetmir. I have everyone's names for this round, and then I forgot to get everyone's names for the rest of the event, so I'm sorry all my opponents, but no one's getting
he
their
doesn't
names
love
for this
only
reason.
I love you.
I'm so sorry. I didn't write down names either.
No,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. All right. My turn one started off really good, but I got my Ragavan mental misstepped after I showed like a couple of mana that I powered out first to then get Ragavan. Like, I guess I just got a little bit greedy, but I didn't also expect my Ragavan to get mental misstepped. And I got null rotted by Jetmir on turn two.
Oh.
Yeah. So I was like, okay. And then I proceeded to draw 3 mana rocks in a row for the next 2 turns. That kind of set the tone for the game. We stacked a couple of wins from Kenrith and Asika, but eventually the Kenrith player, who actually came in from Oklahoma, ended up getting there with the Chatterfang and Warren Soul Trader combo.
Oh, Dalton. Yeah,
cool. Yeah, which is pretty sweet. So that was how the first loss went.
Nice.
Couldn't do anything about Null Rod, and my whole game plan was, okay, get Thrasios out. You got a bunch of mana. We'll get Thrasios activations and take over the late game. And unfortunately, there was no real late game to take over, nor did I have mana to do much. So
Kenneth just snuck in there.
Yeah, so the 0-1 bracket, here we come.
Nice. My first round, I was playing against Tim Najeska, Thalia in the Gitrog, me, and then Magda, so I was third. I wanted to start off by giving my opponents like a good tournament, so I wanted to make sure I mulliganed down to 3 this game in particular.
Ooh,
for them.
Yeah.
You
for
know,
them.
For
yeah,
them.
Not,
you know, I could have kept a 7, but I went for 3 for them. No, I mulliganed to 3, which is fine. This deck only really needs 3 cards, so I'm actually not that uncomfortable going to 3, and my 3 was City of Traders, Lotus Petal, Wheel of Fortune.
That's like the perfect 3.
What more could you ask for on a wheel? But my opponents in front of me go Vexing Bauble, Vexing Bauble. Both of them do this.
Oh!
And so I'm stuck with City of Traders as my only land for like 5 turns, no permanents in play. The next land that I draw is like Phyrexian Tower. So I'm like, I don't even really want to play this because I can't do anything with it. So like, I'm just going to wait. So I was just kind of watching my opponents with my City of Traders slowly accumulating. Go ahead.
I have a question.
Yes, yes.
So did you not cast Rograk turn one?
No, I couldn't. Yeah, I can't.
Oh, because the Bobbles were already down.
Vexing Bauble
right,
came
right,
in front
right,
of me.
Right.
So I
okay.
couldn't even cast Rograk.
Wow.
So I was just looking at the City of Traders.
Wow.
And then the Magda player, played Damping Sphere. Damping Sphere,
that,
you know, every time the next one,
yeah.
also a card that's really good against Rog'Sai. So I'm like, this is probably not my game. I'm just going to watch and have fun. Eventually, the Thalia and Gitrog player is forced to play Culling Ritual because Magda is like super ahead at this point. The Jessica Timna player is also having a lot of stuff in play. So I'm like quietly going like, the Vexing Bauble is going. I've been accumulating cards in my hand. Like maybe this is a chance.
Yeah, I feel like your ears perk up big time.
Yeah, so I'm like, and it kind of has to be done. After Culling Ritual, he makes 1,000 mana, but doesn't end up having white mana for Thalia and Gitrog. So he just kind of like doesn't really do anything with the mana and just has to do it because he thinks he'll die, and then he passes the turn. And then on my turn, it allows me, after all that stuff is gone, I can play, I wrote down here, Lotus Petal, Chromox, Mystic Remora, Land, Wheel of Fortune. So my thought here was that, like, I have to wheel everyone, but I'm going to be playing a Mystic Remora first, so at least I'll, like, draw when they fill back up, which kind of stinks. Hold on, I just think I might have accidentally deleted this.
Don't. That's not good.
Oh.
Where did it go? What the hell? No, it's here. Sorry. I just clicked away from it. Sorry. I'm an old man, and this was kind of confusing. So, I get to this situation where, like, I can dump a whole stuff. I have to wheel everyone. They're going to draw, but they just got all their stuff destroyed. They're going to get a fresh 7 that they don't know what it is, and I have a Mystic Worm in play. So, I feel pretty good. I pass to Magda player. He plays Magus of the Moon. Feeling a little bit less good now.
Yeah.
It's okay. I still have, like, it's all right. You know, it's no big deal. Passes to the Tim Najeska player. He has already Aurex Salvagers in play, and one of the cards that he drew, Lion's Eye Diamond. Oh, before he does this, he also Aurum's Chanced me, and the only interaction I have is Mindbreak Trap, so I can't stop the Aurum's Chanced because he did it first. So then he just LED Aurex Salvagers. The other two players were not blue players.
Bomberman.
And he just Bomberman. He just went Aurex and made infinite mana, and I couldn't get there. That was a game that felt like I don't know that I could have done much else. Maybe I could have kept a 6 or 7 that was a little bit more medium. My thought was the first two hands have to present action on turn one, and if they don't, they're immediately mulligan. And the second one, it has to present a turn two, and if they don't, immediately mulligan. And I didn't see that at all. And I think that was maybe a little bit too aggressive. I think I should have stuck with like more fine turn two action, but I was against 3 non-blue decks. So I'm like, let me look for the nuts here. Let me look for everything because they're non-blue. So if I can get a turn one, there's not much they can do. Wasn't thinking about Vexing Bauble, and I lost that one.
Well, I mean, 2 Vexing Baubles too. Like, it's one thing to get shot in your knee, but it's another thing to get shot in your other knee then too.
Especially against like Rograk specifically, where I can't even cast my commander now.
Yeah.
So that was fun. That was a good way to start the
day. Have another commander, Dylan.
That's true. I do have Silas. I did not end up casting Silas that game, thank God. It didn't get that bad.
So you and I, Dylan, we're both at 0-1, but Tyler's up a game here. So let's go into round 2. Tyler, how'd your round 2 go?
My round 2 was an interesting one. So seat 1 was John on Magda, and then Zach in seat 2 on Timnathrasios, and then I was in seat 3, and we had another Dylan in seat 4 on Yuriko. So there was a lot of early interaction in this game. Kinnan got killed by a pyroblast out of Magda. Yuriko got killed, and some of the Timnathras player got killed, and he had just some like value creatures. So we kind of got put into a really slow game to begin with, where there was a lot of like playing lands, not doing much. There was a Bowmasters on Zach's the Timnathras player's board, which with Yuriko was ending up really threatening my life total and kind of keeping the board in check. And I didn't really want to kill it because then Magda is kind of free to run wild, but Bowmasters completely screws Magda because it's one toughness. So we were sort of locked down, but then I had a Spellskite, which was making me feel safe against the Bowmasters, and the Magda player decided to Chaos Warp it to try and remove that. And Chaos Warp is an unusual piece of removal because sometimes it's really good for the player who gets hit. In a Kinnan deck, you're running the risk that you'd hit a really big creature. So my Spellskite got Chaos Warped into a Thorn Mammoth, which was awesome for me.
That's pretty good.
So then I had a little more board control and I was feeling okay.
Now you're the Bowmaster player now, all of a sudden.
But I was low enough on life total and didn't really have a clear path to victory that I was kind of worried about it. So the Timnathras player interacted to stop a Yuriko win with, I think it was Limduel's Vault. I was like, thinking, I don't think I'm going to survive another turn cycle and I don't have a way to win. He seemed like, because he had a Pact of Negation turn as a result to pay for, he probably couldn't win on his turn, was worried about me pushing, didn't want to spend the pact. And ultimately what he said was, you know what? I think you and I are close. We've got 10 minutes left in the round. I don't think this is going anywhere. I don't know where it's going. Do you want to draw? And I said, you know what? I will absolutely take a draw. Okay. Magda and Yuriko were probably behind at this point.
Yeah.
So I think they definitely wanted to take a draw. But to me, that was just really appealing. I also really had to pee. And I was just like, honestly, I don't think I'm going to win this one. I would rather just eat a draw here because it seems like,
seemed like it was going to time anyway, sort
of. And Timnathras had a million cards in hand. Yeah. And I was probably going to die to Yuriko. Okay. It just
guaranteed
seemed like the
right move. Are better than no points. Yeah. So especially in a spot where you can still be at 4 points or 5 points or
6 points,
you would
be at after a win and a draw.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I think the goal is 11 points at these, right?
I think so.
11 points kind of pretty much gets you in the top 16, but I think there was a couple 11 points that get bubbled out sometimes.
2-0-1. Yeah, I don't remember for this one specifically, but in general, I think sometimes some of them get bubbled out.
It depends on how the tiebreakers end up working out. Yeah.
Yeah, but you mean the 2-2-1s basically.
Yeah,
right?
The 2-2-1s. I don't think all of 2-2-1s get top 16.
Or even 2-1-2s. I don't know. No, 2-2-1s.
2-1-2 would get in.
So you still need one more win, but you can also lose 2 and still have like a pretty good chance of top 16.
I need one more win or 5 more draws.
That's a pretty cool spot, yeah.
And at this point, there are 3 rounds left, so the draws is not looking like
Fingers
the plan.
Yeah, I guess not. Cam, how about you? How did your round 2 go?
All right, so I was up against Marnius, Zyrus, and then I'm going 3rd, and then Obnixilus is going last. And this game was really interesting. I pitched City of Brass to Gemstone Caverns, forgetting that I would need it to cast my turn 2 Ristic Study, because all I could think about was, I don't want to have City of Brass in play while Obnixilus is out all the time.
Yeah.
And so I go into my turn 2, and I don't draw the land that I need, and I say, well, I biff this. Dylan overhears me. He's sitting next to me, and he just starts cracking up and goes, that's like the most Cam thing to ever happen.
It felt like we were still mulliganing at this point, so like we had barely started the game, and I just hear that you already messed up.
Biffed it. Yeah, already biffed it. So I was able to misstep a turn 1 Mystic Remora from the Marnius player, who said, all right, well, that's it for me, everyone, and then felt like they were out for the rest of the game then. And Zyrus eventually tried really hard to win. So I did get my Ristic Study down, and that did put Zyrus down in a really good spot. But at this point, Obnixilus was down and was already dealing a decent amount of damage to the table with a Razorkin Needlehead. Zyrus is trying really, really hard to win. He's able to use the tokens that I give him off of my Rhystic Study draws to Skull Clamp them for two draws, even though there's a Dothy Voidwalker in play, because Dothy Voidwalker only cares about cards and tokens aren't cards.
Tokens aren't cards.
So you can still Skull Clamp away and get a dies trigger from these tokens that he's getting. So he's able to draw a bunch of cards and try to go for a Malcolm and
Glinthorn
win. And then as he moves to combat, attacks with Glinthorn and activates for the first time, we realize, hey, your life total is lower than more than 50% of the tables.
Because of the they just noticed that, or you just missed
like,
triggers?
Well, because like every time that he was drawing two, like the Razorkin Needlehead is also hitting him again too. So like there's been a lot of stuff in with like Obnixilus attacks. Like his life total is at like 22 while I'm sitting in the 30s. Obnixilus is in the 30s. And I think Marnius's life total was lower, but like he definitely could not continue through this line.
Because of the Razorkin, he's losing a life each time, right?
He's losing a life each time. Yeah. So the thought process is, can you, with your Glinthorn Buccaneer draws in the top 22 cards, find a removal spell for Razorkin Needlehead before Obnixilus finds a removal spell for your combo within the top 46 cards? Because not Razorkin Needlehead is triggering for each draw that's happening. And then there's another damage that goes to me and the opponents for Glinthorn Buccaneer, which is also triggering Obnixilus, and that's why Obnixilus sees twice as many. And wouldn't you know it, Chain of Vapor and Deadly Rollick were found at the exact same time.
Oh, weird.
So weird. It allowed us to be able to stop this combo from going off so that way he didn't just win, because getting rid of Razorkin Needlehead would have been it. So that means that we could stop the combo and I could go into my turn with no more Razorkin Needlehead in play.
Seems good.
And I'm at a spot where I don't feel like I should be here, but I have Hullbreaker Horror in my hand and I have a zero mana artifact, so here it is, and I just start going off and making infinite mana. And I was able to clean up that game just from being the next person to go, not letting Obnixilus use any of the 43 other cards that he got to see off of all of those other triggers.
Wow,
so like,
nice.
Oh, it just worked out that seeding order helped me get that win in, whereas like I really had no other business winning that game, which I think also played into the morale of the day too, knowing that like this win fell into my lap and I
didn't
lost
it.
The first game handily. I still don't feel good going into round three then, even at 1-1.
Fair. Okay.
This is funny to me too, because this is one of those moments where like very often the red draw, like the exile and you can play it until your next turn, feels like a draw. And this is one of those times where like if you exile 43, but you don't have access to like do anything with them the same way you would if it was like free counter magic in your hand, it is almost the same as blue being able to draw 100 cards and interact, but it's not quite the same. And like those are the moments why.
It's so funny you say that, because as Glinthorn Buccaneer is trying to find you the answer to the thing that's in play, it's also discarding you all of the counter magic that you had as backup, because it's a rummage effect. You're not actually getting card advantage off of Glinthorn at any point. He can make treasures, but he can't do anything with them.
Sounds like no fun at all.
It was so wild. Yeah, so wild. So I'm at 1-1.
Nice.
Yeah.
Still in it. My round two, not the same. I played against Heliod. That's right. Oh, yeah. Heliod. Flip Heliod, obviously.
Blue-white Heliod.
Blue-white Heliod. Stella, Rogthras, and me. I was second. So it was Heliod, me, Stella, Rogthras. I kept a 5. I kept Fish, Lotus Petal, Land, Flusterstorm. I thought that was a fine 5. The table talks immediately about Rog'Sai. I play Mystical Moor. They say, nobody feed it. And nobody feeds it for 5 turns. I says I draw 2 cards. So I think I drew 2 cards over the course of 5 turns, which is still, I don't know, whatever. But I get to turn 5. Everyone else is playing fish at this point. But then by the time turn 5 goes around, all the fish die and everyone is kind of tapped out for a moment. So I kind of take it as a time that I think Stella is going to untap and win.
Oh.
So I'm like, let me just go now. I had Reign of Filth and I had enough Xaxes to try to go for something. A Demonic Council into Breach. The Demonic Council resolves. So I'm like, well, if that resolves, the Tutor resolves and the Breach will be on. Demonic Council was turned on. So it was just 2-mana Demonic Tutor, which feels great. But 2-mana Demonic Tutor is a little bit worse when you're going into the Underworld Breach lines, because as soon as you exile cards to cast it again, now you can only find a demon.
Right.
So it's less good at like starting up the Underworld Breach line. It's more good near the end. Either way, the Underworld Breach ends up getting countered by Stella. Stella has Force of Will, and I'm like, well, I kind of just like, you had to not have Force of Will. You were tapped out. So I guess people had, I remember people had colorless men up, but there was no blue pips open. So I passed a turn and then Stella won the game. The other players also had interaction for Stella too. And the interaction that was blown on me was Stella's interaction. Sometimes I feel bad when I go for the win, the next person goes, and then everyone else is out of interaction and that person wins. But it was Stella's interaction that was out. The other players had interaction, but the Stella player just like had everything. We were all kind of drawing cards at this point, and it didn't matter. There was like extra counter spells that were able to like win on top in a really cool Stella way. And I don't know why. I feel like I lose to Stella like every time I play it. But yeah, so then I lost that one. Just Stella just had the nuts. It was kind of a bummer too, because I was feeling down on the Reign of Filth line, because like this line is really risky. I have to like, everyone just drew a bunch of cards, and now I have to Reign of Filth all my lands away to go for this line. So like, if I do get stopped here, I lose all of my advantage. There's no way I get through. So maybe there's a world where I'm supposed to just do nothing. But my mindset in Rock'sai is like, if I'm trying to play the grindy game, like that's not really gonna work. Like I have to try to find these moments where everyone's tapped out and just like hope you didn't find Force of Will yet. There's still 80 cards in your deck. Hopefully it's there. But yeah, that's not how this one went.
So interesting, yeah.
Playing Rock'sai sounds so scary to me. I just don't think I could do that.
And maybe I'm not playing it right. You know what I mean? There are other Rock'sai pilots that play a lot better than I do, and maybe they should be doing things differently. The way that I have found it is you just go through like streaks where like, the next time I play Rock'sai, I'll probably win 3 games in a row, and then I'm going to lose 3 games in a row. It feels like Karkin Sakashima in some ways. Your margins are stretched thin. Like there's some games where people will think that they have a chance of winning the game. I don't really ever feel that. I'm either winning or I am not winning the game.
Yeah.
But yeah, just didn't win that game.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
Round 3. Tyler, let's hear it.
All right. Let's see. So my round 3 is when I played Dalton from Oklahoma on Kenrith. He was in seat 1 and we had Arsh on Timna Thrasios in seat 2. Poor Arsh. We'll talk about it. I was in seat 3 and then we had Bobby on Timna Jeska, the deck that I really liked for a while, in seat 4. And I was really excited because I was like, hey, I liked this deck. I was giving it a try, but I haven't even tried it post-ban because I think it really got hurt by these bans. Like, how's it feeling? And he was like, pretty good. And then he didn't really do anything. But no offense, Bobby, but like, I was just like, all right. Still not going back to that deck, I don't think, for now. The reason I said poor Arsh is because Arsh in seat 2 on Timna Thras, he never got one of his colors of land. He basically just played 2 lands and then eventually an emergence zone and just like never got to do anything all game. He didn't hit any of his mana acceleration, so we all sort of were feeling bad for him by the end. He did get to Force of Will my first Kinnan, so that is not nothing, which set me back.
Okay, there was a reason why he kept the hands, okay. Yeah.
Kenrith came out very early, I think turn 2, I want to say, with a Mana Vault. And he had some value pieces, but he got stopped from doing like an Entomb Chatterfang combo because Arsh had an endurance for that. So Arsh continued to just have interaction, but not anything else to actually proactively do. Poor guy. Bobby was kind of slowly accruing value with like Ragavan and Tiny Bones and I think Archivist of Agma, like some little stuff. But he did get stopped from his first win attempt by Dalton on Kenrith playing a Pact of Negation, countering the Grand Abolisher. And then Kenrith played a Silvala. I think, if I remember, he got the Silvala off of a Survival of the Fittest, which was looking juicy. So I ended up being able to activate to Drake that Silvala, because by this time I had gotten the Enduring Vitality card we were talking about down, which gives me some inevitability. And ultimately, I got Flood Caller out, which was letting me activate through my whole deck. It was doing the untap thing that we were talking about. And I had also been able to Clever Impersonator the Survival of the Fittest, which in Kinnan makes it a lot easier to find the piece you need.
Clever Impersonator. Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Seems pretty good. If you can make a ton of mana... Yeah, Clever Impersonator seems pretty good.
So eventually I hit Nyxblim Ancient, which kind of with the Flood Caller thing meant that I was going to be able to go close to infinite. I did need to have enough non-creature spells to cast, but I eventually got to cast an instant speed transmute artifact for the Basalt and then just present the win, activate until I hit Thrasios, all of that jazz.
So nice.
It didn't look like I was winning that one for quite a while, I have to say. I think I looked slow and steady and I was really worried about the Kenrith player running away with it, but we got there.
Nice. So at this point, you're 2-0-1?
2-0-1.
So you already have 11 points. So you're already probably good, but there is a world where, like, if you get more draws, you're
probably
in.
As long as 11-pointers are making it, I'm probably good, because remember that the tiebreakers are, you know, what decides whether you make it versus another person with the same record. And generally, if you win early rounds and lose later rounds, your tiebreakers are going to be better than if you lose early rounds and then win later rounds. So the fact that I went 1-0-1 and then 1 a game means that both of my wins are relatively early, so my tiebreaker's probably good. So at this point, yeah, I'm not locked, but I'm probably close to locked.
You're feeling good. Yeah. Feeling really, really good, yeah.
How about you, Kim? How'd your round 3 go?
So I'm going first, and I'm up against Najeela Tiamat,
And then Thrasios Timna.
Tiamat.
Yeah, that five-color food chain dragon. Yeah, well, we didn't get to see it do too much, unfortunately. I gambled for fish on turn one, and we got there. We got the fish out, didn't end up, you know, regretting that. But I did regret it in the way that no one fed it for three turns. Yeah. I kept it out for a long time, yeah. I know you had a fish that didn't get fed quite a bit, too, in the early game. And I think that the tournament players are way more wise to Mystic Remora than I'm used to, just like playing for content on the show, yeah. So it was a pretty dirty game until Najila found a Quetzal and then was able to just end up getting there with Derevi protection. Yeah. Just like no one really ended up having anything to do.
Najila can really get away with playing that not feed the fish game because they have like mana dorks and their combos are creatures, so they can kind of just like wait and play land drops like really well, right?
Yeah, I think this was the game where I gilded draked the Quetzal away because I was scared of that being something. This wasn't the game. That was a later game. Never mind.
Okay.
Never mind. I'll talk about that later.
So Najila gets it?
Not too much happened. My fish really stopped people from doing too much, and Najila just wins with creatures, and that makes it really easy to get around Rhystic Study, and as we know, a lot of the other counter spells in the format. Yeah. So
Najila's still good?
Najila's still good. So I'm now 1-2. I don't feel too great. I got to win the next two rounds to feel good.
Well,
so
my round 3 will make you feel much better.
Ooh, okay.
So my round 3, I'm playing against Yuriko, Obnixilis, me, and then Timna Thrasios. I kept a second 7. I was like, fuck this shit. I'm not mulliganing anymore. I was like, I'm just going to keep this. This is a turn 2 Necro Dominance. That's going to be good enough. I even had Last Chance in my hand. So I'm like, Last Chance, Necro Dominance. That'll be good. We'll get there. Sorry, I had to Vampir Tutor for the Necro Dominance. So Necro Dominance was in my hand. So turn 1, I Vampir Tutor. Turn 2, I slam Necro Dominance. I draw just like a couple cards. And then turn 3, I draw a whole bunch of cards. A whole bunch of them, and I have this Last Chance in my hand, this sorcery that says take an extra turn after this, you lose the game after this. So I'm like, great, I'm gonna go to my end step, I'm gonna cast this Final Fortune in my end step here, and then I look at the card after I draw the 30 cards and go, oh, this is not the instant speed one, this is the sorcery speed one.
Oh no.
I loudly state how much of a fool that I am because I had the mana in my mains phase. I could have just cast the extra turns phase. I went to my I'm like, oh my god, this is so, don't nobody look at me, please, this is terrible. I have to admit that this is how I'm losing. What's even funnier is I even found Born the Ponto Wind in my hand, but I only had 2 mana up and no other rocks to go for.
Oh, geez.
And none of the rocks that I drew were instant, no 0 mana from there. So now I'm at 8 life. I've paid all my life. I have to sculpt down to a 5, not even a 7, because it's Necro Dominance. So I sculpt down to 5. I keep a hand that theoretically could win. One of my opponents tacks me for 6, so it puts me at 2. Mana Confluence is my only land. My line revolved around me having to tap Mana Confluence at least twice, because I still have the extra turn spell. So I would have been able to set up a win had I been at 3, but since I was at 2, Mana Confluence, I had to lose life to make the mana, and I couldn't set up anything at this point. It was just I didn't have enough resources to go for anything. And then I even found that when I did cast that extra turn spell, I was saying how I wasn't even sure if I could win here, and I don't want to accidentally give the game to somebody else by like sucking up a counter spell out with this extra turn spell, and then the Obnixilis player does Flare of Duplication on my extra turn spell. So I'm like, fucking great. Now I give Obnixilis player an extra turn on top of mine.
Oh, no.
And then we also had to call a judge and make sure we understood how that works, because if I take an extra turn after this one and then somebody copies my extra turn after this one, in which order do the turns happen? What do you think happens?
They go first.
No, I go first. There's resolves first.
Oh, there's resolved first? Yeah. Then yeah. Whichever one resolves after is the one that says you get an extra turn after this. Yeah. And now the other one is now after, if that
right,
makes sense.
Right, exactly. So I have the extra turn spell in the stack. My opponent copies it. So now they have an extra turn spell in the stack. Their resolves first. So they have an extra turn after this one. Then my resolve. So now I have an extra turn after this one. So it stacks like that. So it's weird. It didn't end up mattering. I couldn't figure out how to piece together a land with the mana situation. And then Timna Thrasios had silence for the Obnixilis player. And the Obnixilis player was like, I'm not even going to play. I'm not even going to try. I'm not even going to bother playing it out of it. So he had silence, and then the Yuriko player and Timna Thrasios, they just duked it out. I went to the bathroom. I think Timna Thrasios ended up winning, but to be honest, I don't exactly remember. That was also a game where Yuriko played the pitch spell, Shoring Circle. You pitch it to give something minus equal to the black spell that you exile. Shoring Shawl something?
One of the shoals.
One of the shoals.
The Kamigawa cycle. Yeah.
In response to a Necro Dominance, he killed my Rograk. And it actually would have been ended up, it would have been like super relevant had I been able to sack my Rograk or something.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
At this point, so I'm like, I got pretty bad luck the first round by going to 3 and then getting the 2 bobbles. And then the second one, I got not really bad luck, but just couldn't get there in round 2. And then this one, I'm like, now I just completely made like a very big blunder. So 0-3, not getting top 16. It's fine. I'm just having a good time. We're out of contention at this point. I did Urog side players bad. I'm so sorry.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
All right, well, let's move on to round four then.
Oh, sure. You want me to kick it off?
Yeah, take it away.
All right, so going into round four, I'm at 201, and I find myself at a table with Tyler, who plays Kark Sakashima, who's in our locals all the time, plays around here. So I see him, I see Logan on Thalia Gitrog, and Zach on Yuriko, and I propose that we intentional draw and go get pizza, because I am very hungry. Then we're all locked for top 16. It turns out their records are all such that they can take an ID here and lock for top 16. So we very quickly do that, and I spend the next hour and a half eating pizza while you all play games that you lose.
Play to win the tournament, not the game.
Yeah.
How did your round four go?
So I played against Brandon. Our Brandon, nice. On Blue Farm. He was going first, and then I went second. And then there was another Blue Farm player, and then a Xur player.
Oh, I heard about... I remember this one.
I literally only wrote down one sentence. Brandon won with combat damage. Brandon had this Bowmaster that went, like, uncontested for 90% of the game. And even by the time Bowmaster ran away, he had this 26 token that ended up taking out both Blue Farm and Xur.
That's so crazy that no one could find interaction for it.
No one
at any
could.
Point.
And then even by the time I could, he could still kill me with Crown because I didn't have any so flyers. Yeah. So like he was still able to beat me with Crown. So even though like it was a good game, like it got pretty grindy. Everyone had card advantage engines out. But yeah, Brandon, it was just a really funny win. You just getting there with an Orcish Bowmaster token. I normally don't look at that card as a win condition, but I guess there's times where it legitimately is. So I'm 1-3. I'm not getting top 16. All my dreams are crushed, so moving on to the fun round.
Your fun round?
My fun round?
No,
fun round. Mine first,
five is the four fun round.
I wrote down Timnathras, me, Krark, but oh, that's why there's only three players, because our fourth player didn't show up, because they dropped probably because you're out of contention at this point.
Oh.
So we had a three-player game, they just never showed. We did do something different this tournament, that in the early rounds with the initial drops, normally a lot of people in the beginning, because some people just don't show up, they would have to play like weird three-player games, but this time Aaron in the first round conglomerated those people together.
That way, instead of having a bunch of three-player pods, we were able to make as many four-player pods as possible.
Once the tournament starts, you can't really do that anymore. You can't like repair the pods, because people have different records and shit, or...
Sure, once you're further into the tournament is what you mean.
Yeah.
You can always manually do some repairing, but in the beginning, it makes a lot more sense to do that.
Yeah.
And basically, Spice Rack, which is what they're using now instead of Command Tower, makes it quite easy to like repair the beginning.
Yeah.
So I think they were really comfortable just doing that on the fly.
Also,
time,
you guys, were you the only person at 0-3 at your table, or do you know the records of everyone else?
The player next to me was 0-3, and I don't remember if we knew if the player who didn't show up was 0-3. There was a player who had a draw at this point, but he still wanted to play.
So like 0-2-1 they were at?
Yeah.
So there's no way that you guys are getting into the top 16.
No,
so it doesn't even, it almost doesn't even matter that there's three people at your table.
Right, yeah, which is why I won this one so easily, it felt like. This was like the game that I wanted.
The pressure's off.
Yeah, so I still mulligan to four, but I had Phyrexian Tower, Watery Grave, Springleaf Drum, Ad Nauseam, which is four mana plus an Ad Nauseam, so I'm almost there already. I basically just kind of like wait and like play out my mana. Turn three comes around, and I guess the Timnathrasios player plays Ranger Captain, and in response to the Ranger Captain, I Ad Nauseam then. I didn't want to do it on my turn because everyone had like untapped mana and shit, so I was like, I can just kind of wait and maybe do an end step one. So I waited to try to do in response to the Ranger Captain, just in case I wanted to try to counter the Ranger Captain. Go.
I was going to ask, was it in response to the cast of Ranger Captain?
Yeah, in response to the cast of Ranger Captain, because I was thinking that like if I can untap with an Ad Nauseam, Ranger Captain is something that's going to stop me from doing that. So if I can counterspell this with what I draw from Ad Nauseam, I'm going to want to. So I cast Ad Nauseam, half thinking that I was going to get countered. It didn't get countered. I drew a whole bunch of cards, and I ended up finding a removal spell, the Exile, if you control your commander.
Deadly Relic.
So I'm like, you know what? Ranger Captain can resolve just in case you do something else nasty. I'll maybe counter that, and I'll keep the Deadly Relic. In an end step, I Deadly Relic the Ranger Captain, untapped, and I just had, like, I wrote down, kill the Ranger Captain, EOT, untap, win with Breach. I think I just had enough resources to go for an easy breach win. Of course, the nuts Rograk hand that I have is like in round four after I've lost three, but it's fine. It was still fine. It was a good game, even though it was only three of us. It was fun. I also got to say one notable thing about the tournament. Right around now, I discovered that someone, and I don't know how much you want to include with this, but someone throws up, doesn't tell anyone. Yeah. Other people see this and also don't tell anyone. If you throw up and you're sick, I got it if you got to go. If you see someone throw up in a card shop, please tell the owner so that they can clean it. It's not that big of a deal, but like, don't just sit around throw up. The throw up was clean. Aaron has like a super cleaner vacuum thing or whatever. We had to rope that section off or whatever. You know, it was fine. There wasn't a smell or anything. I just wanted to point that out. If etiquette, you know, if someone throws up, tell someone.
What do you think about puke to win shirts?
Maybe you can make for your tournament series. Maybe you can make puke to win shirts.
Is this where you want to shout that out?
Now that you know that I'm the only one that's winning, come to my tournament. So
wait, if you go to his tournaments, he's going to beat you. Our tournaments, you'll definitely beat us.
No. I'm not playing in our tournaments. You guys are playing.
There's a chance that we can win.
We're playing. We're not getting in the way of the play to win tournaments. I love doing these, but on a slightly different cadence, we're trying to start a tournament series. We got our first one February 1st. By the time you're seeing this, I hope it is sold out. It might not have. We'll see. We have no idea. You can go check at convoke.gg. We have Discord links there and how you can register on Spice Rack and all that. It's a 96 person tournament. It's very similar to this play to win one we just did in terms of the event structure and that sort of stuff. Cash prizing. I don't know. We're really looking forward to it. Go check it out.
February 1st.
February is right now.
Is when this is.
Yeah,
okay.
It goes November, when this comes out, then it's December then January is after that, and then it's February.
Got it. Okay.
This podcast comes out in December, so we have to say it's December.
It's December. For all February 1st.
Round five. Round five here, Tyler.
All right, so round five, most of the table is comfortable with an ID, but we are in the position where some people might not make it if we intentional draw. So we do a bunch of talking about it in the beginning. Ironically, I had just spoken to one of the one player who probably wouldn't have made it if we intentional drawed, and he said, yeah, I probably have to play it because I'm 2-3, so if I intentional draw, like my breakers aren't good.
It was 2-3. He's only four rounds.
Oh, I'm sorry. 2-2.
2-2.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we talked about it for a while, and I end up saying, look, you know, everyone seems to think I'm good at the tournament math on this. I'm not great at tournament math, but it looks to me like you probably won't make the bubble if we intentional draw. So as much as I want to, we're not going to do that. So we end up playing the game. I am at a table with Garrett on Tim Nathrasios, who does want ID and has pretty good breakers. Tim, who's on Plagon, Tim Gold Sabertooth.
This Tim.
That Tim. Yeah. We left him. He is also doing excellently. He, like me, is already locked for a top 16. He's also 202.
On Plagon, which that deck is real.
It's real.
I think that is a real deck. I think that's going to be a deck in our meta. I think it's like the best blue-white deck that we've seen. Sorry, Heliod. I have a lot of high hopes for that deck.
Ooh, do you want to record it in like 3 hours?
Yes, we probably should do that.
Oh, maybe we'll record it with Tim in 3 hours.
Good idea, guys.
Both Tim and I agree that if we could present a win, that we're going to offer the draw. Basically, to try and make the feels bad not so bad for the two players who, if they get a loss, they're definitely out. And Tim and I aren't really interested in just like, you know, winning against each other for no particular reason. So it ends up kind of being, I'll say, like a more permissive game than it might normally have been, because he and I both know we're playing for a draw and that's what we're interested in. So we don't really interact as much as we normally might in an uptight game. He like shows me a force of will and says, hey, I could force your kid in, but I'm just not gonna.
He told me about that.
Yeah. And I have like a mind break trap and a pact and some other free interaction all game.
Yeah.
And he's doing like, you know, some pretty good stuff, like playing the Mystic. And I'm like, going nuts. I don't give a shit. So hopefully this didn't feel bad for Ethan, who's the one who did need to win, because we were kind of just not interacting with each other and just trying not to lose. But it ended up being a game where Plagon and Kinnan really kind of ran away with it anyway, and it seems like it would have happened anyway. We just kind of had all the mana in the world. I hit him during Vitality and was activating like crazy. And I never said who other people were on. Ethan was on Tassigar, which really excited me in third seat, because I do love Tassigar. I think Sultai decks are sweet. I think Tassigar is a pretty good one. And he got to clone a Nyx Bloom Ancient of mine, which was fun. I think that was like the high point of the Tassigar deck, doing shit with a Machine God's Effigy.
That's badass.
Coming in as a Nyx Bloom Ancient, immediately tapping for triple blue is cool. He's like, maybe I should run Nyx Bloom Ancient in this deck. And I'm like, you can Neoform into it. It was neat. I got to activate to death on Tim's turn. I tried to go for it. And by go for it, I mean I would have said, hey, I can win here, but I'm going to offer the draw. And Tim decides to make me sweat and just keeps saying, yeah, well, let's see it. Like, keep going. Like, keep going. Like, show us the whole line. And I'm like, Tim, come on. I've done all the things. I have all the pieces. We have, like, what can we possibly worry about here? And it turns out eventually it's because he has an Angel's Grace in hand and he just wants to cast it so that I know I couldn't have won anyway.
Yeah.
And we hit time in the round anyway. So, like, it doesn't matter.
Oh, that's true.
So okay. We have a draw. It was mostly a feels good game. Ethan, it was a pleasure. I'm sorry you didn't bubble in. We wanted you to, bud. But yeah, that was kind of it.
Yeah, Tim, watching Tim play is honestly quite the treat. The dude is a great politicker and such a good talker. And he was like, I'm not going to reveal his secrets, but he was like going through like some of like his strategies when he's playing, and I'm not going to speak too much for him, but to him, the game is so much about the dialogue, and to you, I feel like it is too, and that's like what you need to be as like a CDH pilot. That was like the big thing that I took away from this tournament, actually, is like, I got to be talking a lot more. Like, I'm just like letting stuff happen. I'm not speaking up for myself just because like, I don't want to. I don't like politicking. But
I don't want it to affect the game. That's, yeah.
Right, but realistically, you need to. Like, you need to use your voice. It's so helpful. So anytime I watch a game of like Tim playing, like just watching him like threaten a source to plowshare but not actually use it so that people could still give him the effect that he wanted. Like at one point he was telling a Magda player, only make one treasure and I won't swords to plowshare your Magda, and the Magda player was like, well, I'll take one over zero, so yeah, sure, I'll only make one. So just the fact of him showing the swords gets the Magda player to slow down for a second. Like, I never think of shit like that.
That particular move is one that Tim is great at. It's not spending the card, just showing the card and saying, this is what I could do, but then you get to keep the card and you're just telling someone, don't do X, Y, and Z because I have this and I could do something with
it. And it is risky because you are giving away information, but it's also like it lets the whole table know, oh great, well now I can't go for my Kiki combo because now I have information that there's a swords there. Yeah. So now I gotta wait another turn, and Tim's playing a slow blue white deck that wants to draw a bunch of cards, so like, yeah, wait another turn, it's great.
Yeah, and you know what's funny, all of the games I've played recently where I've realized there was something I could do differently have been like talking to an opponent and gone like, did you have that before, and they go yeah, and I said
I should have spoken up.
if I would have said something like, how would you have done, oh I would have destroyed that and then done this, I would go, oh well, why didn't I talk more when we were in the game. Now it's way too late.
And it's certainly a line that you have to balance and you have to get good at, and you don't want people to feel insulted when you're talking to them. You don't want to talk down to people. You want to keep it like friendly. Like, you want to feel like, you know, be friends. You want to keep it like friendly with the people, of course. But it's something that I took away that I got to do a lot more of this tournament.
Yeah, I don't think you have to believe people. I think if you genuinely table talk with your opponents and say, hey, you know, I'm not the one trying to win right now. This player is, like, let's talk about how we can focus them down and spend our resources to like deal with this player. Like, it doesn't have to be like tricky, you know what I mean? It can just be honest. It just use your voice. The other thing is, reveal your hand more. Like, I think people should do this way more. People will like not actually have anything, not actually be going for win, but other people are afraid of it anyway. Figure out what your opponents are afraid of in your deck, and if you don't have it, show them you don't have it, and then they're your ally, and they will spend their counter spells to counter the stuff you want to counter instead of against you, because once they know what you have, they can evaluate for themselves whether you're about to win.
And something that you can do in tournaments that you really can't do in webcam as much is, like, in tournaments, like, you're allowed to show certain people cards and not other people, right? Like, you're allowed to reveal information to certain people and not others, whereas webcam, you can't really do that. But talking to the table and saying, like, hey, I know you have interaction here, but I have another type of interaction. Like, let's make sure we use these at the right time. You have the Dispel, so you counter the Dark Ritual. I have the Abrupt Decay, so I'll get rid of the Underworld Breach. Little things like that, I think that can be also very helpful, but that's hard on spell table.
Yeah.
Round five for you?
Yeah, so I'm going first. I'm up against Sisse, Max and 11, and then our good pal Nate on Najeela.
Wait, what was the second thing you said? Sisse
and then Max and 11. Do you know the...
Is this like a Ren and Six?
The Red Green and the Grixis Friends Forever cards. Do you know these? The Stranger Things cards?
Oh, okay. I remember 11 now. Now that I'm realizing this is 11 as a person, not 11 as like a Ren and Six.
As a tree. No, this is not what that is. Yeah, this is Max and 11, the Red Green creature that makes clues sometimes.
When you cast the second spell, I think.
And then 11, who lets your maximum hand size be 11 and draws a card when you attack and then lets you cast something for free if you have 11 cards.
I'm going to be honest. I feel like I play against someone that's playing the Stranger Thing partners like once every 2 months. I cannot remember ever losing to them a single time, and I just don't care about Stranger Things, like, so like it doesn't do anything for me in that sense, so I just don't retain the Stranger Things partners.
That's fair, yeah.
If you're playing them, like, yo, go nuts, but like I just can't. I don't understand them.
I think the best thing that you can do with those partners is play four colors and not look like the threat. I'm not playing Tim the Thrasios or Yidris or these things that people know how they work. I'm playing these weird fucking little, you know, Stranger Things characters. I truly think that's the best benefit that you get from those. Like, you're still playing normally four color good stuff piles, but you're just playing commanders that are less good.
I can't believe I lost this game. I had Seedborn Muse out for a turn cycle and then cast the One Ring and felt like really good about the position that I was in, especially because then I tapped out for Vexing Shusher here. I think this was the game that I ended up Gilded Draking a
Gutsoul.
Kutzul away from the Sisse player, actually, because I really didn't want them to win the game on their turn after, like, I untap with Seedborn Muse, the One Ring, and then, like, am able to have Vexine Shusher there to also make my stuff not counterable as I'm trying to stop other wins. But as now I have Kutzul and I have Vexine Shusher and all my men is tapped out, the Max and 11 player has now found the opportunity to auto-wara my Seedborn Muse back into hand at this time, which even I was so mad that I had tapped out, but then I looked at my hand and I was like, I had Veil of Summer and Mental Misstep. So like even the interaction that I did have wasn't going to be able to stop a auto-wara no matter what. So like I can't be mad about myself tapping out there. Like auto-wara was just the one thing that was going to stop me. And Sisse then couldn't win because we ended up being able to still interact with Sisse's win attempts. So then Max and 11 was able to untap and just really take it from there. So it was just that perfect window, having the perfect card at the right time. Like it all matters. So ended up losing that game and went 1-4 in the tournament overall.
Shame. Still fun day?
Still fun day, yeah. Still fun day, yeah.
My round 5 played against Yuriko, Rockthrash, me, and then Master Transcendent, the same Master Transcendent from earlier. I kept a second 7 of Gemstone Caverns, Brain Freeze, Mystic Remora, Pyroblast, An Offer You Can't Refuse, Mox Diamond, and I wrote down V-A-L-U-Y. Wonder what that was. V-A-L-U-Y? I don't know what that was. I autocorrected for something. Some other card. Either way, the game was kind of grindy. Eventually, I stuck a Horn, the 5-mana Horn. My Demonic Tutored and was a card short for Underworld Breach, so I had to go for a Wheel instead. Cast Wheel of Fortune, and I wheeled my opponent into 3 counterspells, so I was still able to present to win with backup, but they had 3 counterspells and were able to stop me. It was another game where my Mystic Remora didn't draw me a whole ton of cards because everyone was kind of chatting. That was the big thing that I got, is that, like, I have been striking fear into the hearts of CDH players about Rog'Sai for a while, and now everyone talks at the beginning of the game and says, we all have removal, right? And it feels much more difficult to win games where everyone's chatting about like how to stop me right from the beginning, because all everyone's thinking about is, I want to just stay alive as long as possible. If we draw, a draw is better than a loss, so if I stay alive as long as possible and win at instant speed, win at protected, win later, I think that's where everyone is. I think for a while I thought there was like a window where stuff got banned, so I'm going to try to win quickly before people figure out what they're doing. I think people figured out what they're doing. I think people know at this point, and Rock'Sai wins felt a little bit more difficult than they have in the past, but I was also making a couple mistakes, and that kind of happened. So 1-4, did not do particularly great with Rock'Sai. I still have the deck together. I still think it's really good, but I am looking at Timna Thrasios a lot more. Just like being able to grind, kind of just like everyone else is doing it. Like I kind of want to also be doing it rather than like go for the turn one, get stopped, and then watch for 6 turns, and then maybe get back there and at the end if I can resolve Heuristic, but really just watching. That is a lot of fun, but I also want the option to grind. So
I think I figured out what that probably was, by the way. I thought you were saying one of the commanders, one of the other commanders.
That's no.
You mean a card in your hand?
Yeah, card
in my
hand.
I think that probably is Vault.
Vault, maybe a mana vault.
I think it might have been
a mana vault. Yeah,
Think about where the U and the Y are placed. They're near the T on the keyboard.
That
if you're just
right.
Flying through it, probably.
That sounds right. Oh, there was also a situation in this game where on my Mox Diamond, I never found another land besides Gemstone Cavern, so I was able to Mox Diamond and then An Offer You Can't Refuse It on the stack to make 2 treasures.
You got there with it.
Yeah, to be able to do that and then try to cast Heuristic Study afterwards. Of course, my opponent had Mind Break Trap, so I was like, that's what it is.
They just have it sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, 1-4, but it was still a super fun tournament. My main takeaway was I think I do want to be able to grind more at the tournaments.
So Tyler, you made it to top 16?
I did. Yeah.
How did your top 16 game go?
Well, I lost, but it was an interesting game in a lot of ways. So let me tell you about it a little bit. We had Anton in seat 1 on Timna Thras. I was on Kinnan in seat 2. We had Jake on Blue Farm in seat 3 and Jerry on Rog'Thras in seat 4. So this felt like a super metapod. Like you hear that, you're like, wow, these are like the 4 decks that feel maybe not Kinnan so much, but that feel like high in the meta right now.
I think Kinnan, definitely. I would consider Kinnan like the 3rd best deck in the format, if not better, but in that top 3, I think. At least right now, it seems like, well, who grinds better than Kinnan? Who does what the metagame is right now better than Kinnan, I think.
These guys are a little bit biased because they see me play it all the time.
That's probably true.
I don't know. If you go look at other channels and like their top 10 ratings, Kinnan's usually at like 5, sometimes 6.
I could see an argument for 5. Yeah, I could see an argument for 5.
Remember, we've yet to be wrong on the show.
That's true. We're never wrong. Yeah. It's our show, so we're never wrong.
Yeah, it sounds like everyone else's problem.
Okay. Yeah, I think you're right. Cool. So Anton and I both had pretty strong starts. He had a turn 1 Mystic Remora. I had a turn 1 Mystic Remora. I actually think there's a reasonable chance that this is the best opening hand I've seen in Kinnan in like maybe months. I had a Fetchland, an Elvish Spirit Guide, so those were going to let me cast Kinnan turn 1. And then I had a Mox Amber that I could drop and a Mystic Remora, so that means I can do all that on turn 1 with Kinnan out. And then the rest of my hand was Seaborn, Basalt, and Pact of Negation.
That's literally as best as it could be.
Yeah. Almost, yeah. I mean,
second land might be good somewhere, right?
Yeah, I need some more interaction, maybe. I need some other game plan because, like, Basalt doesn't win on its own without an outlet. But this is the kind of hand that means, like, almost no matter what you draw, it's good. Like, you already have the pieces. All you need to draw is anything else, the rest of the deck. I was feeling really good about that, but the Mystic Remora out of Anton and Seat 1 ended up being really fruitful. Like, we did both draw a bunch of cards.
How do you get your opponents to feed your Mystic Remora?
They didn't feed it a ton. I think I drew maybe three or four cards in the early game there, and Antron drew about the same number.
That's three times the amount of cards I drew off of Mystic Remoras over the weekend.
Well, I think it's because two of them came down, and then your opponents have to either say, we are going to work together and try and, you know, play through it and see if we can draw enough stuff to stop them from winning the game with what they draw, or they can basically accept that they're out of the game and it's a two-player game with the two of us and they're going to just do nothing while we get to advance a little bit. And because we're feeding each other, right? I'm feeding his Remora, he's feeding mine, so we're already pulling ahead.
No, I get in this scenario. I just mean like in general.
In general.
Like, how do you just,
no,
like,
people don't feed my
make
Remora
all of
in general.
Them do that all the time?
No, it really doesn't happen all the time.
There's got to be a reason why he lost.
I'm trying to figure out. Yeah, because it's not me.
It's got to be like luck or something. I can't think of anything else. So
yeah, you're saying something. Like, what are you doing to them?
Yeah. What are you doing to them?
Yeah.
How do you
with
make
my
your,
Millennium Rod?
How do you make your opponents play like shit all the time? Huh? How do you make them do that? Because mine always play really, really good.
Yeah, I'm never off of my game, ever.
Well, have you ever tried credible threats of violence?
I've been offering monetary value.
You're bribing.
But
it's not working.
I keep getting kicked out of tournaments for doing that, though.
All right, how did the rest of this go?
All right. So Anton kind of pulled ahead on the advantage engines on board by getting down a Rhystic Study and a Lotho after this long Mystic Remora period. So I ended up spending Pact of Neg to stop an Orcish Bowmasters that Anton played, because with my draw engine, it was going to either shut off my Remora or kill my board or both, which is really bad for me. So that was in response to a Timna trigger, and then Anton ended up playing a huge Calling Ritual once it got back around to his turn, and we spent a lot of interaction fighting over that Calling Ritual, but ultimately it was just the Calling Ritual got through. He had a Flusterstorm that canceled enough of the interaction from the table, and that produced enough mana for him to put up a well-protected win.
Nice.
So it was really as simple as Calling Ritual. He kind of said later, like, this is huge in this deck. A lot of times I find myself tutoring for Calling Ritual. We think he did tutor for that Calling Ritual, and it turned out that when he advanced to the finals, I think there was also a time that he tutored for Calling Ritual. So he seems to be on a Timna Thrash that is focused around building a game where you can Calling Ritual and win with that as your dockside.
Card
so
seems so
interesting.
Good.
Oh my God.
Such a good pull to green. Like, if you're playing green, like, getting rid of the pesky little things that you need to get rid of, as well as a huge boost of mana, it seems so good.
Being able to cast all of your green creature tutors into play off that, too, so you can get, like, a blue creature into play off of a Finale of Devastation or something afterwards feels really good.
What was your main takeaway from the tournament in the day, like, CDH? What was your main thoughts of, like, what did you good, what did you not so good, what did you see?
I thought I was going to see more Winota and more Beatdown than I did, because I have felt lately like that plan is back to being kind of viable, and I'm pretty scared of that, partly because it's a bad matchup. So that's why I put Cyclonic Rift back in, but I really didn't see that much of it. I saw a lot of Timna Thrass. I saw, you know, a lot of Magda, like, you know, some of the normal decks, and I felt like things are back to being a little bit slower and stacksier. When initially it looked like everyone was rogue-pilled and the meta was going to, like, actually speed up at first after the bans. Given that that's not happening anymore and it seems like we're slowing down a little bit, I think I'm pretty excited. This is good for Kinnan, as usual. It plays well under stacks. I also think Plagon is a super real deck, and watching Tim play that was like, holy crap. Like,
I guess draws so many cards.
Yeah, I guess there's a good transition into the finals of the day. Yeah, so our top four ended up being Aiden on Timna Krom, Tim Goldsabertooth on Plagon, Anton on Thrasios Timna, and then Zachary on Yuriko. So it's a really cool, pretty diverse top four right there.
To me, this is like stereotypical CDH top four of like three very meta decks and then one deck that you haven't really ever heard of being Plagon in this one.
Yeah.
But like Yuriko, Timna Thrasios, and Krom Timna is like, those are your staple tournament finishers, right?
Yeah, and then Plagon just kind of making its way in there, just like showing off how Cloud Shift can be a one mana draw seven.
Yeah.
This is pretty busted.
Why don't you pause the video and write down who you think won? And then it's a trick question. Just wait.
Yeah.
Because we actually had to call the end of the tournament because
there was a fire in the mall.
Yeah, a massage chair caught fire.
Yeah, so we had to leave in the middle of the final. Everyone packed up their shirt right away. We didn't decide a winner. I don't know that this has ever happened in a tournament that like we just couldn't find
a
winner.
There was no winner, yeah. And because they all split the pot, so it's not like any of them walked away with a no prize or a lesser prize than they expected. They all got the thing that they expected, but
there's just a playmat now that's been signed by everyone who was in the tournament that was supposed to be given out to the winner that I don't know what we're going to do with
that.
Yeah,
I'm thinking about cutting it into fours and giving a corner to each of them.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
There you go, yeah.
How the game went, honestly, a few players seemed like they thought that they had a good chance to win it. The Timna Thrasios was grinding a ton. Plagon was really showing off how insane it is. It really could have been any games, but it really showed me like how Rhystic Study, everything is so grindy. And like the Valley Flood Callers being able to win on top of stuff, the very protected win, the Ranger Captain, the Hullbreaker Horror, that all felt like very relevant in those games.
Big time, yeah. But I did see several moments where Timna Thras seemed to be really running away with it. I think Anton was kind of arch enemy at the table for a long time. There was also, I think, a lot of talk about tutors taking really long and like some kind of weird plays just in terms of what was getting fetched to deal with Yuriko and some other stuff. But anyway, the upshot of all of that being, it's not super important, but even though they're untimed, just remember you can't, like, don't tutor for more than 10 minutes. You just can't do that.
That game lasted 2 hours before
they called it, yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know how you kind of, because it's an untimed thing. You have to find a winner, right? But I do think it's important that someone is kind of enforcing, like, time and just, like,
enforcing
slow play
just, like, specifically. That's really all you can do.
I always think, like, you got about a minute to think with nothing. If no action has been taken after around a minute, and I don't know if that's the official stance, maybe it's longer than that, but I don't know. And I've been guilty of it too, but it's important for other podmates to just like keep everyone honest and just like, let's find an end to this game.
And
right?
It's most egregious in the finals when politicking is at its maximum and you're trying to convince people to do things to get you ahead. And just like the maximum amount of words that can be said are being said.
Yeah, every single action, the whole table talked about everything. Every time anything was done, anytime anything was put on the stack, what do we all think about this? Everyone was like chatting the whole time, which is a little bit of that is like obviously fine. I'm not critiquing anything or anything, but like you got to finish.
You just got to keep it moving, though, is all, yeah.
No one was hurt, obviously. The fire was completely contained, and it was all good.
Real quick before, though, we end here, I do want to shout out our patron, SC Phillip, who actually came by and did a bunch of data for the event, too. So if you go to stormcount.net or the link in the description of the video of the podcast, you'll be able to get all of the really cool data that he got that will include, like, the highest-ranked decks of the tournament there.
Can we see that quickly? Like, what deck, like, won the best? I know you said there was, like, over 40 different decks.
Yeah,
40 different
like
commanders.
47 different commanders here.
47 different commanders out of 90 some players is kind of crazy.
What was it? Storm what?
Stormcount.net. Timna Thrasios had a total of 39 games, which also includes like the counts of people who made it to top 16 as well.
Was
so
that the most games played? Was
the
Timna
most
Thrasios?
Games was Timna Thrasios with a 26.32% win rate, followed by Yuriko had a total of 21 games and a 25% win rate. Timna Krom had 21 games at a 45% win rate.
Oh, wow.
After Timna Krom, then is Rograkh Thrasios that had 20 wins and a 30% win rate, or 20 games and a 30% win rate. And then number 5 was Rog Silas with 20 games and a 20% win rate.
Okay.
There's a couple of other decks that had like higher percent win rates, but that's also because like less people would have been on them. Yeah. Like Plagon has a 100% win rate.
Yeah, because Tim went undefeated. He got a couple draws, but he picked up no losses in the event.
Yeah, exactly. So he did very well. So, yeah, so definitely recommend checking out that link so that you can get like a lot more of the data because Philip did a great job.
Cool. Thanks so much for watching. If you'd like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Spangler, Demetrius Clark, Larceny Roars, Your Boy Blue, Sparky B, Insomnia, SC Phillip, Olden Groupie, Gecko 21, Caleb Ritchie, Zach Hartley, Reactive, Sean in the Ice, Stormageddon, Luke Cook, Demon of Roskries, Peter Stewart, Corner Wild, Uncle Butts, Nick Fullsgoat 09, Quajay Hamid, Lauren Kynel, and Baby Jeebus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com, including our sleeves, which you can find at the Dragon Shield website, the link down below.
Speaking of Dragon Shield, thank you so much for supporting the show. Check out our affiliate link down below to get your Play to Win sleeves down there and 5% off.
Follow us on social media.
And listening.
What do you want me to say? Social media?
No, that was it.
That was it.
Roy Turner, Mystic Muffin Man, Jacob Bauer, Tyler Watson, Zachary Coulson, Tyler H., Jabaha, Mace the Ace, Dalton Poteet, Hobo Ghost, Justin Mansolo, Jacob Depp, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
I saw Wicked recently. Got Wizard of Oz in the brain. Cam, can you talk, please?
Yeah, when I came in, he was humming loathing. He was going, hmm. And I was like, oh, I forgot about that one.
Yeah, I used to know the Wicked songs because we had to do, I think we saw original cast, I want to say, for a field trip in like 7th grade.
That's dope. Holy cow, choir. Yeah.
But I'm just not that kind of gay. I do not like musicals. There's not a single in the musicals, one that I like.
Oh, damn. You didn't see the movie then, I imagine.
No, and I'm not going to.
It was incredible.
I've read the book. It's the book is great.
The best movie I've seen all year, I think. La la la.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.